Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the best of things that go bump in the night. This is JC Bratton coming to you from San Jose, California. In this episode, I'm going to continue my investigation series on the phenomenon of near-death experiences. My last episode focused on a phenomenon called the light. In this episode, we're going to talk about the concept of the life review. I'm sure you heard the old saying, "My life flashed before my eyes." This typically happens when someone is having a traumatic episode. Well, that's essentially what the life review is. The life review is something that happens to many people during a near-death experience. It's probably one of the first things that happen to them. During the life review, the experiencer will reach a point where they see some sort of panoramic vision of all the different events that occurred in their life, such as when they were in grade school, when they learned how to drive, when they got married, when they had their first child, and so on. What's even more fascinating is that the people aren't just seeing the events from their own point of view. They're also seeing it from the angle of the other person. So for example, let's just say that you got into a fight with somebody when you were a kid, and maybe it involved hitting and punching. What will happen during this life review is that you're not only going to re-experience that event, but you're also going to experience it from the other person's point of view. You'll be able to physically feel the punches, feel how hurtful the situation was to the other person. Now, you wonder, well, how is this even possible? Well, this is where things become really interesting. Are these life reviews something that the dying brain produces? To study this further, it's best to look at patients who experienced cardiac arrest and were later brought back to life via resuscitation. When a person's heart stops and they're considered clinically dead, what ends up happening is that there have been some recent discoveries where the brain actually starts producing a burst of gamma waves. Now, gamma waves appear in abundance during dreams and seizure episodes, so it's heavily involved in the review of memories and the storytelling of the brain, if you will. Well, okay, that makes some sense, right? It might make sense that as part of the natural process of death, maybe built into our DNA, we enter into this life review. Now, why is that? What's the purpose? I mean, if you're just going to die anyway, why do we need to have this review of our lives? So that's where, again, it becomes even more interesting. We're talking about some deep philosophical things now and just don't have a scientific answer for it at this point. But what we can do is speculate and take some anecdotes and qualitative feedback and put together a story. And what this story tells us so far is that when a person does die, they'll possibly go through this life review process, whether it's triggered from gamma waves, you know, that remains to be seen. But at least we do have some evidence that something does actually happen. The bigger question is this: where does consciousness come from? Is it from the brain itself, the material? Or is the brain actually just a conduit or filter? Now, Dr. Bruce Grayson indicated in a 2020 IONS conference that the brain is similar to a radio. It's essentially filtering out information needed for survival. And it's not a concept that Bruce Grayson came up with. Hippocrates mentioned that the brain acts as an interpreter. Then you could say that consciousness is an abstract construct and needs the brain to help create the overall human experience. So the brain acts as a conduit rather than necessarily what actually creates the conscious experience. Now, this is not a far-fetched conclusion, even with gamma rays that are appearing right before the end of life. Could this burst of gamma waves help the consciousness download, if you will, memories to the actual core of consciousness before you can move on to whatever that next adventure is? So you can see now that the life review concept has many facets. What I'm going to do now is play a few clips to help elaborate some of my points. First, I'll share with you the News Nation interview clip where they talk about the discovery of the gamma waves in the dying brain. Next, I'll share another News Nation clip, but this time it's with Dr. Sam Parnia, who's a leading researcher in near-death experiences, who will explain what his research has recently uncovered that somewhat counters and also supplements the gamma wave report. Third, I'll share a clip from Dr. Bruce Grayson's talk from IONS, where he discusses the concept of the brain acting as a radio. And last, I'll share a continuation of an interview with Dr. Kenneth Ring, where he focuses on the life review phenomenon. Now, this interview comes from Jeffrey Mishlove's show called Thinking Aloud. So sit back, relax, and see if you can draw your own conclusions regarding the phenomenon of the life review.
New brain scans of a dying 87-year-old man shows there could be some truth to that old saying, I saw my life flash before my eyes. As Dina Baer from our Chicago station reports, the discovery was actually accidental, but it has now opened the eyes of doctors about what's possible after we die.
He did not plan the study. It was very accidental.
Neurosurgeon Dr. Ajmal Zemar was monitoring a patient for seizures using electrodes placed all across the skull when the unexpected happened.
While we were doing this, the patient unfortunately suffered a cardiac arrest and died.
The heart stopped, but the sensors still in place picked up the patient's final brain waves.
That left us alone with the recording from alive to death.
As the University of Louisville neurosurgeon studied the rare recording, a rather beautiful story unfolded.
There's very specific brainwave patterns that are happening in the brain while we have a recall or replay of memories. So this is known in healthy humans.
In studies of healthy humans, brain activity recordings have shown active gamma waves as a person looks at pictures of memorable life events, a wedding, the birth of a child. The same waves appeared in abundance in the dying patient and for 30 seconds after death.
What exactly happens? When is the time we really die? And the brain stops really being active.
The dying patient's brainwave patterns appear to correlate with those who have had a near-death experience.
If you look at near-death experiences, the people who describe them fairly consistently. They describe memory flashbacks, memory recalls.
The finding has sparked both scientific and spiritual debate.
Am I merely seeing nerve cells firing and brain waves being active, or do they have a functional meaning and they let us perceive these memories and recalls? That to me is the biggest question.
Dr. Zemar says he plans to continue the fascinating investigation.
How would we like to imagine our death? I leave it to everybody else to decide by themselves. I would like it, for me personally, to be span of seconds, I replay memories before I die. I would like to die with that feeling. That wouldn't be a bad thought.
Dina Baer, News Nation, Chicago.
Right, there's a study that is examining, and this is a new study, what happens to our brains when we almost die, right? This will get your attention. Researchers studied near-death experiences in cardiac arrest survivors, suggesting nearly 40% of people undergoing CPR show signs of having memories and dreamlike experiences or some type of perception, and even signs of awareness consisting of being conscious, sometimes up to an hour. It's a first-of-its-kind study published in the Resuscitation Journal. The associate professor in the Department of Medicine at NYU Langone Health, Dr. Sam Parnia, is the lead author in the study and joins us now live to talk more about it. Thank you for being with us. Happy Friday. This is fascinating. I'm curious how the research started and, more importantly, what you discovered about these near-death experiences in cardiac arrest.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you. Just to give you some background, you know, there have been millions of people from around the world who've reported that when their hearts have stopped, which is essentially what happens when we all die, and they've gone beyond the threshold of death, been brought back to life again, that they had reported an incredible experience where they felt that their consciousness, so even though they look like they're in a deep coma to the doctors like myself, but from their own perspective, their consciousness continues and it becomes hyper-lucid and much more powerful. Their thoughts become clearer. And at that same time, they also have a perception of being fully aware, watching doctors and nurses, but also having a fascinating experience where they review their entire lives. So not just as like a random flashbacks, But every interaction they've had with others is reevaluated in a purposeful manner. They learn their intentions, their thoughts, and they evaluate what they've done. And so our study essentially tried to explore for the first time ever in a large scale what happens to the brain in people using special brain monitors as they're being revived back to life. And we were trying to see if we can find signs of these lucid conscious experiences in people to validate what they have been saying for years.
So you would have to monitor someone in cardiac arrest, and it's such a spontaneous, scary event. How do you even do that?
Yeah, it's a very difficult challenge. This was actually carried out across 25 major medical centers in the United States and the United Kingdom mostly. And what they had is the doctors and nurses were given a prepared pack that they had different brain monitors and equipment that they would take with them. These were dedicated research staff, and they had to work in conjunction with the clinical doctors who were trying to save the patient's life. And the research staff would put on the monitors on the brain and allow data to be collected about what was happening in the brain second by second as patients were revived. And so it really was unique. We also had developed special tests using a tablet, like an iPad with an app, with a headphone that we would put on patients, and that would give them sounds and video, audio and visual stimuli that we could then later test for to detect consciousness in them.
Wow, incredible. I have less than a minute left. You often hear people see like a white light, or they see deceased loved ones. What was the most unique experience that someone was able to recount that they saw?
I think the most unique experience and the most unique aspect of this finding, if I may say, is that essentially we were able to show markers that indicate these experiences, such as the one I'm about to tell you, are real. They're not hallucinations. They're not imaginations. They're not like a delusional experience. And what they described is actually reviewing every moment of their lives. And so that was the key thing. And what we think we understand is that what happens is as the brain flatlines and stops working, it actually gives access to hidden parts of the brain that are released from braking systems. And this gives people access to their entire consciousness and other dimensions of reality that seems to be more suited for people as they're going from life to death.
Yeah, wow.
This and other NDEs like it suggest that the mind, the part of you that experiences consciousness, is not the same as your brain, the mass of pink-gray matter inside your skull. In fact, it suggests that the mind, or consciousness, is actually better, functions better, when it's free of the limitations of the brain. Now, this model that the brain creates the mind is a good working model for everyday life. When you have too much to drink, or get hit on the head, or have a stroke, your thinking suffers. It may help to think of these models as tools for dealing with the world around us. And you may need different tools for different tasks. For example, a hammer is an excellent tool for driving a nail into a piece of wood. It's not a great tool for screwing a nut onto a bolt. In the same way, the model that the brain creates the mind is a good working model for everyday life. It doesn't work for explaining NDEs. What's a different model? A different model is basically what Steve Luding said happened when he was 8. That the mind receives, the brain receives the thoughts from the mind and somehow filters them, selects the ones that are important for the body's survival, and then converts those into signals, electrical and chemical, that the body can understand. Think of a radio receiver. There's lots of stations broadcasting all the time. If you heard all the radio stations that were available, you wouldn't be able to hear anything. You need the radio receiver to filter them out, so you only hear the one that you want to hear. Without that, you couldn't hear them all. This is not a new idea. The Greek physician Hippocrates wrote about this more than 2,000 years ago. He said the brain is the interpreter of consciousness. And throughout the centuries, Different scientists have described this model in different ways. They said the brain is a filter, a gate, a reducing valve, or a prism, something that takes the raw thoughts and converts them into something that's been processed that we can then use. Think about if I were to call you on your cell phone, you would hear my voice coming through the cell phone, but you would know that the cell phone wasn't creating my voice. I was speaking, and the sound of my voice was converted to radio waves. Your cell phone picks up the radio waves and converts them back into sound so you can hear them. Now, what happens when your cell phone is damaged or runs out of power? You can't hear my voice anymore, or you hear it in a garbled way. But my voice is still there. I can still talk. But without the active cell phone, you can't make sense of what I'm saying. And that is why, when the brain is damaged, your thoughts don't come through as clearly to your body. It should not be surprising that the brain may filter our thoughts. All of our senses do this. Your eyes transmit light to you. That's not all they do. They also filter out the ultraviolet, the infrared, all those frequencies that are irrelevant to your survival, and just let you see a small portion of the possible light spectrum that's important to you. Your ears transmit sound to you, but not all sounds. You don't hear what dogs and cats hear. The ears filter out those frequencies that are not relevant to your physical survival and just let in what's important to you. So it's consistent with what we know about neurobiology, that the brain should filter out thoughts that are not important to your physical survival and just let in those thoughts that your body needs to keep going in the physical world.
I think this is one of the most remarkable aspects of a near-death experience, and it's one that's not really given the amount of attention that it should. Obviously, many people know about the light, they know about the out-of-body experience, but the thing that really is, I think, important about the near-death experience and in regard to the life review phenomenon is it isn't just a life review. It's a reliving of your life. And when people describe this, it's not always done in this way, but when people describe the full experience, it's every single act that you have done, every single thought that you have thought, every single word that you have spoken, suddenly all of this is back with you. You are running through it again. And as you say, you see and you experience the effects of these acts, these thoughts, and these words of other people. Let me just give you one brief example to illustrate this. I have a friend who had who, when growing up, was kind of a roughneck. He had a hot temper, and he was always getting into scrapes. And one day, he was driving in his truck through the suburb in the town where he lived, and he almost hit a pedestrian. And he got very aggravated at this pedestrian, and he was a very big physical guy, still is. And a fight ensued, and he punched this guy out and left him unconscious on the pavement, got back into his truck, and roared off. 15 years later, this guy has a near-death experience. Oddly enough, it was caused by an accident in regard to his own truck at that time. But in any event, he has a near-death experience, and during the near-death experience, he has a life review. And in his life review, this particular scene of the fight takes place again, comes up in his life review. And he said that, as many people do, he kind of experienced this from a dual aspect. There was a part of him that was almost as if he were high up in a building, looking through a window and seeing the fight below. But at the same time he was observing the fight like a spectator, he found himself in the fight, except this time he found himself in the role of the other person. And he felt all 32 blows that he had rained on this person originally 15 years ago, now being inflicted upon himself. He felt his teeth cracking. He felt the blood in his teeth. He felt everything that this other person must have felt at that particular time. It was a complete role reversal, an empathic life review experience. And this is the sort of thing that many people report. And when they report these kinds of experiences, they realize that in our life, we are the very people that we hurt. We are the very people that we help to feel good. And we experience these actions as though done to ourselves in the life review. So that when people start talking about the golden rule in the context of the near-death experience. The golden rule is not just a precept for moral conduct, it's the way it works. And you experience this during the life review. And you learn that lesson in a very forcible way as a result of going through this kind of experience. And that's why when people have NDEs, they change as much as they do. Because if you can even imagine what it must be like to go through your entire life and see everything that you've ever done without judgment, but from a kind of almost omniscient point of view with regard to the effects of those actions, and see what your actions do to other people, it's a heavy kind of lesson, and it's something that stays with you, and it informs your conduct for the time after your near-death experience. So it does give us a lot to think about, and that's why I say in my book, Lessons from the Light, the near-death experience isn't given just to those who have the experience, it's given to all of us to learn from, because all of us can profit by the lessons that near-death experiences learn in the course of the life review or other aspects of their experience, and we can grow from these lessons, and we can apply these lessons into our daily life.